Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Bigfoot and Company. This is Dr. John, and we've got an exciting, exciting guest and program lined up for you today. It's been a big week in Bigfoot exploration, and a lot of great news is coming out. First of all, I want to say hello to my very, very good friend and co-host, Matt Delf. How you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing great. Getting ready to prep up here for this cold weather and snowstorm getting ready to set in. But other than that,
I know. Yeah, that polar vortex, it's going to – how many inches of snow do you expect to get?
Well, they're giving for my area around 8 to 10 inches of snow, and that's supposed to start here this evening. Well, actually tonight supposed to start, and some of the lower elevations, maybe 4 inches, but where I'm high elevation, then between like 8 to 10 inches. I can handle the snow, but I can't handle that cold air.
Well, I know. I mean, I'm down here in beautiful sunny Myrtle Beach where it's 50 degrees, and I'll be able to go out tonight and look for UFOs. We'll have a clear sky, and it's going to get down to 45, so there's a light jacket. But I sure wouldn't mind being where you are. What's Bigfoot going to do when we get all this snow and it gets cold? What do you think?
I think he'll hunker down into a cave. Or lots of caves.
All right, well, if he comes knocking at your door, you bring him on in, get him some fire, and let him warm up, okay?
If they're cold, all right, well, if you're cold, don't bring them in.
That's exactly right. All right, we are pleased to have from Washington State, Tom Cantrell. Tom, good afternoon, and thank you for being with us here on Bigfoot and Company.
Well, you're quite welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Yep. The reason Tom is here, so that everybody knows, is I got a message from the wonderful lady Maria from the Bigfoot portal, and she said, John, you need to contact Tom because Tom's going to be doing an event down in your area because, as everybody knows, we put on the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference and the Georgia Bigfoot Conference and soon to be another one in the area. We'll talk about that maybe in a couple of weeks. But she said, give him a call, and I did. And, boy, we had a great time talking. And the first thing I said was, now, Tom, since you're doing so many great things, would you be on our show? He said, well, sure. And so, again, thank you, Tom. Thank you for the Bigfoot Portal for putting us on to Tom. And Tom, tell us, you've got a big conference coming on up there in Washington State. Tell us a little bit about that and how you're involved.
Okay, it's the end of April, the 26th to 28th. We are right now have 16 different presenters lined up to present. One thing that we do that's maybe different than other people is we don't go in for the television celebrities, personalities, the college professors, unless they have mud on their boots, okay? We advertise our conference as a Muddy Boots Conference. We will spend Friday night and Saturday indoors talking, learning. People like Ron Morehead is going to be there. Keith Bearden from your part of the country, down Georgia area, is going to be here. Like I said, we have 16 people on the dais, and every one of them has had personal face-to-face encounters with Sasquatch. Our keynote speaker is coming all the way from Russia to be with us. He's the head of the International Hominin Institute in Moscow, Russia, Dr. Igor Bertsev. Again, Igor is allowed, even with a doctor in front of his name, because he has field time. He has boots on the ground time and knows and understands these beings. We're not about fancy stuff. We're about getting information across. The theme for our conference this year is, okay, what now? We've all been there. We've all had experiences of one kind or another. Now what do we do? One thing we're going to do different on Sunday is rather than having a straight day of classroom instruction, we're going in the field. Barb Shoup, Squatching with Barb and Gabby. Barb is going to be running one of our classes. Devin Masson, videographer from Shark Week, is going to be running one of our classes. Samantha, no, last name just jumped right. Ritchie, Samantha Ellen Ritchie, wrote a book on Sasquatch and on photography, is going to be doing a photography workshop there. So we're going to be doing a lot of things other than just talking about Sasquatch. We're going to be in the field, and we're going to be doing some field work while during the conference as well. I really invite everybody to come out and see us. Join with us. We have an absolutely beautiful venue. It's a field house. It was built in 1931, all Douglas fir lumber. If I had sat down to design a venue, I couldn't have done a better job. It is absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely big veranda along one side. Inside's all hardwood floors and softwood walls. Just beautiful. Just absolutely gorgeous place. And we're going to get underway about 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon on April 26th. And we'll spend Friday and Saturday there. Then Sunday, we'll move up the road about 20 minutes into the Cascade Mountains. We'll be directly across from Mount Rainier in the area where Barb does most of her filming for her Barb and Gabby series. So we're right in amongst them. It's just a matter of will we have the opportunity to see them.
That sounds great. Now I've got a question for you that just jumped out at me. So you've got your keynote speaker is coming from Russia. Can you tell us just a little bit about the institute with which he's associated? I find that fascinating.
They have been, actually, they've been a worldwide leader in this investigation. They understood and accepted the Patterson-Gimlin film long before any American scientists ever did, long before they would ever even look at it, to be truthful with you. My Russian is not very good, but he ran the institute, and now Dr. Burtseff runs it, and they've published books on the fact of the American Yeti, and the fact that it is a fact and not a supposition. They understand this. They have these same beings in Russia. They have them in China. They're called the Yeren there. They're all over the world. These people have just had the wherewithal and the foresight to do the studies, to do the scientific studies if they're necessary. Okay, and he's going to come over and share his work with us that they have accomplished in Russia. And I know they've had some great strides in the Siberia region. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know if we're going to be able to understand him, but it's going to be interesting.
Well, let's hope you can. I was going to ask you one question for some of us. We may not be able to make it over there from the East Coast. Will you be videotaping your keynote speaker and your speakers so that we might can enjoy them after the fact?
As a matter of fact, Greg Yowney is going to do, he's volunteered to do a video for it. He's a professional videographer here in the area. He's done the Sasquatch Summit the last couple of years and does a very good job at it. He also did Dr. Matthew Johnson's last conference and did a quite good job at that too. The only thing that he doesn't do well is he doesn't screen his commentators very well. I have no problem with somebody who disagrees with me. That's part of anytime you raise your head above the parapet, you're going to have disagreement. Take a stand on anything, and somebody's going to disagree with it. That's no problem. We could talk about that. But when respect leaves, I do have a problem with that. And some of the statements have just been so absolutely vicious and, you know, personal attacks by people that don't know us at all, but they're against the subject, so they attack the messenger. You know how that works. And I would like to see that stuff removed. I don't think it serves any useful purpose whatsoever. If you want to argue the facts, if you want to debate the facts, I'm more than willing to. But I'm not going to get in a mudslinging contest with people.
Well, those are wise words. They really are. Matt, I know that you've met some people and been around some folks that have certainly said some things that weren't appropriate about your area of research and everything, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I kind of welcome the debate. I love getting into it with some people because I just throw some facts out there, you know, that they're like, well, Bigfoot don't exist. That kind of stuff like that, I love that because I throw out some facts from the government, you know, that they can, if they choose to look it up, they won't most of the time. I just throw it out there because, you know, we know it's out there. I've personally seen it. I'm not trying to prove to the world during my investigation. My whole journey is real personal for me since I had an encounter. But everybody else, all these skeptics, they want to throw stuff out there, and they try and ridicule people and try to make them, you know, they want to make fun because they live in this. They don't live outside the box. They just,
what? You know, what you're saying, Matt, is entirely true. They don't have an argument, so their argument is to attack the messenger. It's really just a sign of a weak mind. I don't have time for those type of people. There are too many people that want to know, that want to learn. They're going to take my time, not these fools that just want to raise a stink or raise a havoc. I just this morning finished writing an essay on why is there a body, and it's going to be part of my next book. But it's an important question. You know, why don't we have a body? Well, yeah, that's you would think so, wouldn't you? Until you stop to look at something. What is the population of these beings in this country? You know, I've figured it out for Washington. It's taken a long time, but in the state of Washington, there's somewhere between 300 and 350 Sasquatch that live within the state, 71 million square miles. Okay? Now, they live an approximation of about 100 years. Now, if you have a being that lives 100 years and there's only 300 of them, that means that in a year's time, three of them die. That's three individuals in 71 million square miles. Now add to the fact that they bury their dead. That does compound the problem. But try to get these people to stop and even listen to what you're trying to say. All they want to do is regurgitate talking points that somebody else has said. They're not even their own thoughts. I'm not sure most of them have even ever had an original thought, but that's not what's coming out here. They're just regurgitating other people's thoughts, okay, in order to argue with you. So they can't successfully argue with you, so they have to attack you. And that's where the party ends as far as I'm concerned, because I just won't deal with those people.
Yeah, it shows a lot to me. Like, whenever I had my encounter afterwards, it changed my life, and I had to, I mean, it was a personal journey then, and I studied wildlife, and I had to learn what I'm dealing with if I'm going to be in that environment. And a lot of people, they always ask about the body and stuff. And this would be a totally different other show. It doesn't matter if we have a body or not. So here in the United States, it's not going to go public. I'm sorry, but it's not going to go public. That's, like I said, totally different show. But it's not going to go public. Nobody would know about it. They'd be covered up. But stuff just, if you learn your environment, like a carcass out in the middle of the wilderness, in less than 7 days, it's going to be gone between scavengers and everything else. And a lot of people don't think about that. And there's, like, I believe, like an inch of compost, like dirt and stuff, every year adds on top of stuff. So if you got something that's where people don't hardly even go out into that area, if you do have a body out there, over a couple of years, it's going to be whatever bone, anything that's left, is going to be covered up with dirt. I mean, it's kind of funny when people say stuff like that, because you never find a bear's body out there. You never find a bobcat unless it's been hit by a car or something on the side of the road. Other than that, if you're out hiking, you never find a carcass of definitely rare animals. Like you said,
no,
the population.
One of my points is very basically, how many bears have you found the bodies of? How many cougars? You know? Yeah, we find a deer and an elk, but there are literally millions of those in this country.
Yeah.
And even here, we only find them once in a great while. It's the University of North Carolina did a study on longevity of a deceased body in the wild. And they actually chained down, wired down a deer body to the ground so it couldn't be carried off by the larger scavengers. And they found that a week was tops. And it wasn't the big animals, it wasn't the large scavenger did for them. It was the wee beasties, the insects and the larvae and the maggots and such that ate them up within a week. And and then, like I say, with the scarcity of them, put one of those, you know, three of them in, well, one of them in what, 25 million square miles and try to find it. Lay it out on a picnic table and try to find it in that size of area, you know?
I
defy people. You made a good point, too, about it not coming out. I think the worst thing that could ever be done for these people would be for our government to have to take ownership of them, to have to step up and acknowledge that they do, in fact, exist. Our government is run by special interest groups, and they would be up there screaming, you know, close off all the back areas. Nobody allowed off the roads, you know, and they'd get it done because they'd have an arguing point. These people need this protection. No, they don't. We're the ones that need protection. They're doing just fine. You know, it was Milton Friedman, economist for like four presidents, who made the statement. He said, if you put our government in charge of the Sahara Desert, in 5 years there would be a worldwide shortage of sand. And he's absolutely right.
He's correct.
They have such a wonderful track record with indigenous people now. Don't you want to see them do that again?
You had mentioned Igor. He'd actually spent some time down around my area on the Janus Carter farm, didn't he? In southern Tennessee. Igor, from Russia over there, didn't he spend some time over here on the Janus Carter farm down here in southern Tennessee?
Yes. He also has some people he contacts in South Carolina area, Columbia, South Carolina area, regularly. Matter of fact, I lived in South Carolina for 3.5 years, several decades ago, but back in the middle of the last century. But I lived in Virginia and South Carolina for a total of 7 years. So I know the area pretty well. I got around quite well. You had mentioned Myrtle Beach. Used to go up there drag racing once or twice a month from the Charleston area.
Thank you, sir. I'm glad you approve of Myrtle Beach.
One thing we're going to do, too, we have this conference that's that we're doing in April. We're going to follow it up in October with another one in the greater Atlanta area. We do that simply because we have a lot of speakers come from long ways away, and it's so much easier to bring them into the airport and be within a half hour, 45 minutes of the airport, rather than drive up to, say, the northern part of the state where it is so gorgeous. I understand that. We had a conference in Dahlonega a few years ago that was absolutely wonderful. But we're going to hold it down to we've been visiting Western Georgia for the last several years. We have a gathering there that has always met with wonderful success. There are many, many people that have had their first encounter on that outing. Matter of fact, I believe it was 2013. I believe it was. Don't hold me to this exactly. It could have been 2014. We were sitting. We had 20 of us in camp that we limit our gatherings. We had 20 of us that were camping there. We were all sitting around the fire at night. Two ladies across the fire, directly across the fire from me. I mean, I was looking right in their eyes. Neither one of them had ever had an encounter of any kind. All of a sudden, one of them's eyes got about as big as saucers. Her bottom lip started quivering, and all you could hear was, and her finger came up, and I poked my head, twisted around real quick. There's two Sasquatch standing right at the edge of the firelight, joining in on the festivities. It turned out there were three of them there that night. Three of the people, Keith Bearden was one of them. Carla Williams, you may know, she was another one. They followed them a ways and caught up with them, and there was an adult and two juveniles there that had come up to the fire. And I mean, they were standing right on the edge of the lit area, and basically the whole camp got to see them. And that's the type of encounters we've had there. Plus, the nights are so fantastic there with the calls back and forth. It's just an absolutely wonderful place. So we're going to hold the conference in that general area. We're going to do the same thing. We'll have a full list, a full slate of presenters who are tops in their field. They may not have letters after their name, but they got mud on their boots, and that's, to me, is more of a criteria than the letters any day.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That sounds great.
Yeah. You talk about Georgia there, that area. I've got a lot of good friends up there in northern Georgia, and it is like a hotbed up there. And I'm
sure
going to do some research up there. In March, I'll be heading up there from March to try and do a lot this spring and summer up there. And I definitely, I know Dr. John, we're going to try and hit that conference down there whenever you have it. You said October?
Yes. Yes, it'll be 4th, 5th, and 6th of October.
That's great, because that's 3 weeks ahead of the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference in Kingsport that we're putting together. So that'll be wonderful. We'll get down there and hopefully find some of your folks that have a free weekend 3 weeks after that, and they can come up to Kingsport and have a great time with us.
I think that's a good idea. I'm up for that.
Well, that sounds great. You know, you were talking, and I'll repeat this. This is the third time I've said it. But when I met a fella who's with the North Carolina Park System, he's a park ranger. When you're talking about the government ignoring Bigfoot, they don't. Part of the annual training for the park rangers is a class called Bigfoot 101. And they wouldn't be doing that. I mean, he said, even if you don't believe me, let me show you the training schedule. And he went to his smartphone and He pulled up the training schedule for this March, and he said here, and it said plain as day, Bigfoot 101 held by Michael Murphy. So they know, they're aware, and I'm just not saying much. It's kind of
like
hard.
You
know,
as a matter of fact, Fort Lewis, a big military reservation in western Washington, huge, huge place. Fort Lewis and McChord Air Force Base side by side. A lot of backwoods there. And in the sentry's night orders were what to do if you happen on one.
Yeah, the Army near 75 for state of Washington, they admit it right there in their atlas of species of animals. They've got it right there in the, forever for the public to see. I think a lot of that's getting trying to get covered up and brushed under the rug, but I mean, there's documentation right there. It's a concrete evidence that government knows about it. They can act like they don't, but we know that they do.
Mm-hmm.
They
keep their nose out of it.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
We really don't have anything they need. We just need to have the idiots stop shooting at them. Of course, I'd rather they didn't shoot at me as well, but, they don't need our protection. That's the main thing. They don't need our protection.
Oh, no. No, they don't. That's for sure. Yeah, have you had, like, any of encounters or anything? Because my encounter was excessive. It was not friendly at all. Do you ever had any, like, aggressive, you know, possibly a bluff charge or just, you know, anything that, you know, that you weren't wanted there?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you said.
Have you had any aggressive encounters or anything with any that, with me personally?
Yeah, in 60 years of doing this, and I mean it's been over 60 years now, started in 1958 with the Jerry Crew incident is where my interest started and where I started looking into these people. I have never had what I would call an aggressive encounter. Now, have I been in the wrong place and they didn't want me there? Yes. What did I do about it? I left. You know, it's not rocket science. I left and come back again another time when I wasn't interrupting whatever was going on. Can they be aggressive? Yes, they can. Get between a mother and her baby and threaten them. You'll find out exactly how aggressive they can be. But as long as they're treated with any kind of modicum of respect, they will never be aggressive to people. If you're trying to stay hidden, the last thing you're going to do is create incidents that have to be investigated. It just doesn't make sense. That'd be like starting a fire, you know, and having a finger pointing way up in the sky right to where you are. It just doesn't make sense, you know.
Right. Now, through my encounter, first encounter, I was a total skeptic, and I was fearing. I didn't even know these things exist or anything. Now, my encounter and was an aggressive encounter. It did not want me there. It threw a stick, I mean, that went with some force. It went flying by my head, and it was snapping trees. I don't know if it would have hurt me or not, or if it was just running me out of there. I didn't stick around to find out once that tree branch went flying by my head and it let up that scream. I mean, I seen it and it kept closer and closer and I got out of there. And that was my first experience. And now after, of course, 20 years of research later, I found out a lot of people say it's pretty much, you know, that was probably just a bluff charge, but I didn't stick around to find out.
Well, you know the difference between a bluff charge and a real one, don't you? On the real ones, they don't stop. On the real ones, they don't stop, you know? But, yeah, you're right. It probably was just an a behavior to get you to vacate the area because you'd interrupted something. That happens. Okay. Also, you got to remember, these are big dudes. When they, you know, their greedy grunt is just a low guttural grunt. But as big as their lungs are, big as their throat capacities are, and the resonating chambers, when they do it, it sounds terrible. But all it is a greeting. You know, I can't even emulate it because I don't have the capacities to do it. But really not an aggressive being.
This one, it was. I mean, it was. You know how a primate will shake trees and stuff to let you know, hey, this is its territory. And what I believe I encountered was that I was on a deer trail, and it was off the deer trail like I was. So I have a feeling it was probably doing the same thing I was doing. It was waiting on deer to come through there, and I may have disrupted his hunt. But it let out that scream with it. Okay, now the scream, it had a growl in it, and the scream had a high and a low tone that cannot be duplicated by a human. And it went right through me, and it had some force. I mean, with that scream and that growl all in it at once, it completely shot through me. And I was, at first, I didn't know what it was until I actually seen the visual. But after that, then, you know, I knew it wasn't nothing human. But it had let out that.
It gets your attention, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it changed my life forever. Thank you.
We can do things to get the bad side, and some of them just don't like us. I mean, I've run into them that, you know, were just as soon I'd disappear off the face of the earth, it wouldn't hurt their feelings at all. But I don't see them causing that to happen. You gotta remember, through throwing the rocks or throwing the sticks, I found that 99% of the time that's juveniles and adolescents. And who in the world gets in more trouble than any species than adolescent males? They hunt with those weapons. Okay? If they wanted to hit us, they would have no problem doing it whatsoever. But they don't. You know, yeah, they come fall at our feet, they go by our heads, they go by our bodies, and they want us to get away. It's just that simple. Get away. It's scary when it happens, but it's happened so many times now that it isn't even scary anymore. I just, okay, I'll back off and leave. This is when I can still walk. I'm pretty much bound now. I can't get out like I used to, but I still do, and I still have my contacts with them. It's important.
Well, now, you know, you mentioned contacts with them. I think we've all got a mutual friend up there, at least on Facebook, Kiwani Lasparitas. I know, I think you both know who he is. He talks about having not only physical contact, but some realms of psychic contact with them. Tom, have you spoken with him about that very much?
Oh, quite a bit, yes. And I've, you know, I don't know whether I can't say I've had psychic contact because I don't know what that is. I have had language contact from the mind with them on many occasions. But that's not,
I believe that's what it is. Please continue.
He's, you know, I think his goes even beyond what, you know, what I talk about. Because I only know what's happened to me. I can't really speak for what's happened to other people. But, yes, there are at least certain ones of them. I don't know if they all can. There are at least certain ones of them that are able to communicate with you in a telepathic manner. Now, is that a big shock? Anybody who is a Christian and who understands the mission of the Holy Ghost has had the same type of communications. It's just a different voice. I've had messages and warnings from the quote Holy Ghost unquote, but that doesn't mean that everybody can do that or everybody can receive it. I don't know what the criteria is there, but I do know that they can do it because they have done it.
Yeah, that's a good point. But we don't know what others are experiencing, so we can't judge that. But that is great. That, 'cause see, I've never had no telepathic or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, who's to say? You know, they're getting it from somewhere. These people are. So I mean, you know, it's hard to explain. You know what they are experiencing. Only they know.
That's right, you know, and that's something that we have to remember in dealing with people is we don't know exactly what they're experiencing. They try to explain it to us, but that doesn't mean they have the words to explain it correctly or perfectly either. So, and then how are we going to look at it? We're going to look at it in light of our own experiences. Oh, yeah, that's the same thing that happened to me, or that's not at all like happened to me. Okay, we're a creation of our own past. Everything we've done in our life up to today creates who we are, and it also creates how we view things. We have a decided slant on everything that we view, determined by what we understand it to be. You know, that's why I see so many people who get themselves scared. They go out and they saw one and it was a monster. Well, they went out expecting to see a monster, so what do you feel they were going to see? It had to be a monster, correct? In all things, you know, in all things, our mind controls us. Let me tell you a little story. This happened in June of 2014. There were a group of us camped at a place called Elk Meadow, which is, you know of Bluff Creek in Northern California. The next ridge over is Blue Creek. And at the headwaters of Blue Creek is Elk Meadows. We camped there, just a small group of us. And one night we were coming back into camp, and at the milepost 14 mark on the Gasky Orleans Road, which is right at the headwaters of Bluff Creek. If you went off the bank there, you'd drop right down into the blue waters of Bluff Creek. We came around a curve, and there's two Sasquatch standing right in the middle of the road at 20 feet in front of our car. The lady in the passenger seat, named Jackie, was over from England. Jackie had come here just for this gathering, and she just absolutely screamed out, "Bigfoot! Bigfoot!" And by the time that she finished speaking, they were gone. They didn't stay around to make acquaintances. They were gone over the bank. Arla was in the back seat and just saw the limbs moving and saw the trail where they went. Okay. But Jackie had a 20-foot face-to-face sighting with two Sasquatch in the middle of the road late in the afternoon. Beautifully lit day. In the 14 miles between there and camp, 13 miles between, we were at 14, we had to go to 31, so figure that out. The distance, about 30 miles, 20 miles left to go to drive anyway. By the time we got back to camp, Jackie had convinced herself she had not seen two Sasquatch standing in the middle of the road. What she had actually seen were two Mexican drug mules wearing long-haired ghillie suits with flip-flops and backpacks on. Her mind would not allow her to accept what she had seen and retreated to something that it understood. It was one of the most fantastic displays of what your mind does that I've ever been part of in my life. It wasn't until sometime later one of the ladies said, "Jackie, you traveled 6,000 miles to see what you saw. and now your mind's not letting you see it. And she got thinking about that, and a day or so later, it finally dawned on her. Yeah, her mind was playing tricks on her. It was doing exactly that, because she had seen two Sasquatch in the middle of the road. They were not, I mean, it was June. We were at 5,000 feet elevation. You know, there's nobody growing drugs at that elevation at that time of the year.
Right.
So, you know, it's still freezing every night. We'd get up in the morning and we'd have a half-inch skim of ice on our water buckets. It was that cold at night. So you know, that's high elevation.
I've experienced a person, actually, 2 weekends ago, and they were telling me about an experience, and they were talking like you were saying. It's like their mind didn't want them to accept it. It happened, but their mind did not want to accept it. I know exactly what you're talking about. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's the most interesting. I don't know if a study's ever been done on this, but if not, it needs to be done because it's fascinating what happened. That was a fantastic trip, too. We spent a week there, 9 days, I think, at that spot. And, we had every day had face-to-face encounters. Every single day, somebody in camp had face-to-face encounters. It was just alive with Sasquatch in that area.
You know, Tom, that's a very interesting subject. I spoke with Marshall Masters, who is the Planet X guru. In fact, I've got him on tomorrow for a special edition of ScaryCast at 4 p.m. Eastern. But he was talking about when the ships came over with Columbus and landed in North America, and how the Indians could not visually see nor understand the images of those ships. And they were basically sitting ducks. And it's documented in history. I don't know that anyone's ever really studied it. The only person that I could think of might be Rupert Sheldrake. In fact, I ought to just get up with him and ask him. He is he's studied some very interesting things about human perception, the mind, and areas that some folks would call parapsychology. So, I mean, I might check in with Rupert and see if he knows of any studies. I hadn't really thought. I mean, I've known about the Columbus thing for years. I read about it a long time ago. Marshall brought it up. It's in the Edgar Cayce material. And then you bring up the same exact thing, is that people's minds don't want to recognize what they are seeing. And it's really kind of interesting. And another person that we need to talk about with that, Matt, would be Jen Cruz, because she is, to a large extent, a counselor. And she deals with what people see, feel, and understand. So next time either one of us talk to Jen of the She Squatchers, we need to ask her that question. All right, Matt?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's an interesting subject. Totally interesting subject to pursue.
Thank anybody who's ever really pursued.
I guess the question is what you see what you get? And the answer is no.
No, it simply is not.
What you see what you get? No.
That's why eyewitness testimony is so little counted on in court, because that can be misconstrued. We can see something and it not be what we think we saw, but we're going to interpret it as we thought we saw it.
Exactly. Well, you know what? As we're speaking about this, we've just had a call in, and I believe this is our best friend from Australia, Jackson Samuel. Jackson, are you on the line with us?
Yeah, I sure am there. Dr. John, how are you today or tonight?
Doing great. We're here. We got Tom Cantrell, and I'll bet you've been listening. You got a question for our guru from Washington State?
Most definitely. Straight off the bat, I'd really love to say I completely agree with people not understanding what they see. Like, a lot of people have a really closed mind and they identify things as to what they're familiar with, not with what they're not familiar with. Unless you have an open mind, you don't really understand what you're seeing. I completely understand what you're saying there.
You're absolutely right. Oh, and by the way, one of the ladies in camp that week at Elk Meadows was from Australia. She had traveled over from Australia to be with us and had a wonderful time.
Oh, that's great. Now, moving on from that, I was listening to what you were saying before about them having telepathic powers, and you mentioned the Holy Spirit and everything. Now, a question that I posed to Dr. John in a conversation last night, this is to you, Tom, is that, hate to digress a little bit, but what are your beliefs about Bigfoot being the Watchers?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Okay, you were saying that you mentioned the Holy Spirit, Bigfoot being telepathic, and I believe that they have an understanding with the Anunnaki and UFOs and so on and so forth. I was wondering if you may have a belief that Bigfoot may be the Watchers, and if so, if you may be able to elaborate on your belief.
Well, you know, I really don't know. I certainly believe that UFOs exist, but I don't know what they are, if you understand what I mean. My degree is in a technical field. I'm an engineer, and there's a lot of hard and fast rules of physics that apply there, and one of those is the speed of light. So we've got a problem if we're going to travel interstellar. To do so and do it in a timely manner. So until they solve that problem for me, I have trouble with visitors from another planet. Does that mean they don't exist? No, that just means that I have trouble with them. Okay. Other people may have the answer, but I don't. So it's not something that I investigate much, because I have an area of expertise that I've been asked to look at, and I pretty much stick to that. UFOs fascinate me, but I don't know. Do you understand what I mean?
I certainly do. Yeah. I just look at all different aspects of everything that could be involved, and I've just got a really open mind. Like, I don't dismiss anything unless. I think it's complete. Not real. I've had a lot of different experiences in many things, and I don't dismiss anything unless I have 100% discountability of it.
I like that attitude very much.
I really enjoyed this. I must admit, I've really enjoyed this conversation tonight, because it's opened up a lot of more things for me to be able to look into myself. And it's sorry, I've been rude, Matt. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing good. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing good, mate, too. Yeah.
What part of Australia are you from?
I'm from New South Wales, mid-north coast of New South Wales. I'm about maybe 200 miles north of Sydney.
Oh, super.
I
have an Aussie mate. He lives in Germany, and he's don't get old. It's not fun at all. It's a little Tasmania. He has a place in Tasmania. But
that is a beautiful island, isn't it?
He really loves it. He tells me all about it. But he lives in Germany now. He was in the music business for a lot of years, and then now he's retired. But he's just an absolutely cool individual. I just love him to pieces.
Beautiful.
The Aussie mate He's also my world's worst critic on my writing. Okay? He loves everything I write, so he's absolutely no good at figuring out whether it's good or not.
Well, you got to have a bunch of those, Tom, or you won't be a successful writer.
You know, he's good for the ego, just not real great for logic.
Everybody needs a critic. It makes us, you know, makes us want to just get better.
Yes, it does. Yeah, and you know, thank you for coming on here. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, most definitely with you too, Tom. I'd love to catch up with you at a later date.
Please do. Please do.
Yep. Okay, well, I'm sure that Dr. John and Matt could arrange that. And
I'm
going to sign off now, but you guys have a lovely night. And thank you so very much for answering my questions, Tom.
Yes, sir.
All righty, you guys have a great night. Good night, Dr. John. Good night,
Matt. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Jackson. Yeah. Well, now, I will say this as a little shameless plug for tomorrow's talk with Marshall Master. He's going to be talking about the Anunnaki. So we'll have him for 90 minutes right here on ScaryCast. So that will be a lively discussion, I'm sure, because there's so much has been coming up lately, some historical finds and everything, and I've been trying to do some research and working with some folks. So, you know, there's just a lot going on out there about the Bigfoot experience, whether it's the physical sightings or tracking them or, excuse me, some of the more spiritual things like we've just been discussing. Now, Tom, I don't know that we've asked you or not, but do you have a favorite Bigfoot sighting experience you'd like to share with us, one that we haven't talked about yet?
A favorite, huh? Actually, they're all favorites. I just love any moment I get to spend around these big guys. They're just unbelievable. But, yeah, I probably do. That's because I learned so much about it. It happened back in the late 1970s, and I was hiking in. I used to be a logging engineer, and I did a lot of bridge site surveys, designs for logging roads. And I would hike in several miles to do these because, you know, if they were near the road, the company sent their own foresters. If they were a long hike in, they'd hire me as a consultant to go do it, if you understand how that works. I was hiking in one day. I had about a 3-mile walk. Came around a down log, came around the root wad, and there was a patch of huckleberries there. And they're standing feeding on that patch of huckleberries was about a 9-foot, 9.5-foot tall, very large, very broad male Sasquatch. We were 8-10 feet apart. I mean, I just came around the root wad and there he was. So I just stopped and I said, "Well, gee, hi, buddy, how are you doing today?" And his eyes kind of popped up at me. He did a double take looking at me and just looked at me and turned and started to walk away and looked back at me one more time and then just walked off. And I was thinking, you know, this is the absolutely, being an engineer, this is the absolutely perfect time to get statistics, to get recordings, because it's fresh. I watched it happen. I know that this is what it is. I know what made these tracks. I don't have to guess. So what I did, it was muddy. This area where I was on Washington's Olympic Peninsula, right out next to the coast, and it rains a lot, like 200 inches a year there. And that's why I was there that day. The water had dropped enough so that the river was back in its banks and I could get in there. And so what I did is I took my boots off and I walked alongside of where he had walked. And then I was able to compare both of our feet size, her stride, her pace, all the aspects of our walk. And it was most enlightening. For one thing, I found out that even though they have big feet, we actually sunk in the ground about the same distance in that soil. And that made me curious as to why. So I sat down and I measured our tracks. And I don't know if you know what a planimeter is, but it's a device that you use, that an engineer uses for measuring, like a pile of gravel, things that are not of uniform shape. You can get a volume or a size from it, depending on how you use it. And so I used this on this, and I found out that I had 31 square inches of foot on the ground. At the same time, he had like 78 square inches of foot on the ground. Now, don't hold me to exactly these figures, because it's been a long time and I'm old, okay? My memory isn't what it should be. It's written down, but these are representative. I know mine was in the low 30s and his was in the high 70s, low 80s, right in that range. He had over twice as much foot on the ground as I did. And I could judge weight pretty well then. I used to buy a lot of cattle in the auction ring, and I could judge the weight of a steer coming through to within 20 pounds. So I thought I had a good weight estimate on him too. And when I worked it out, we were both putting 7.5 pounds per square inch pressure on the ground. That's why we sunk in the same amount. Okay? Different soil types probably wouldn't have been the same. This particular soil type, it was. So by doing this, I was able to come up with some statistics. And using anatomical constants, like the ratio of foot length to height is 6.5. If you have a 12-inch foot, you're going to be, you know, at the middle of the bell curve, 6.5 times higher than that. So what's that, 7 feet, 6.5 feet, something like that, for a 12-inch foot. Okay, it's 6.5 to 1. Now, if you take that same amount, and by measuring this too, I was able to come up with the fact that the foot was an average width of 40% of its length. So if you want to figure the area of a foot, take the length of it times 40%, that'll give you the width. Multiply that width times the length, and now you have the square feet of it. Multiply that times 7.5, and you have his weight. And that all came from this one afternoon.
That's awesome.
Why I
love
it today. So.
I love that. That's a very smart approach to getting the weight. That is awesome. That is definitely awesome.
That's an engineer for you. You know, you give them two numbers and they're going to work them together against one another, right?
Exactly.
So now, what was the approximate weight? If you said it, I'm sorry I didn't hear it, but what might his approximate weight have been?
I judged him to be about 650 pounds, and that's what I used to develop the pound per square inch rating, okay, because I could figure out the square inches, of the foot, and a estimated weight, I could get the pounds per square inch, and then I used that figure in all other calculations, and it seems to be holding true. It's very, very close. You know, it's not everyone's going to be the same, and this is something that I have to explain to people over and over and over again. Just because the anatomical constant is 6.5 to 1 doesn't mean that every being in existence that has a 12-inch foot is going to be 6 foot 6 inches tall. No, that's the center of the bell curve. What is it, 96.8% or something like that will be within 3 standard deviations of that tip peak of that bell curve. Okay. But they're not all going to be the same, but that's going to be the center point that it'll rotate about. And people can get upset at you when you say those things, and they think that you're calling them a liar or something, and you're really not. You're just trying to get it all in, under the same umbrella, you know, so that we're all speaking the same language.
Exactly. Brilliant. It's definitely good. I mean,
I'm glad we got this on here. I'll do some, because I've got some training in statistics. I'll do a little looking at this. I'll re-listen to it and see if, Tom, if I can get you some further insight on this. I apologize. I have some letters after my name, but they came from NC State, and they taught me a little bit about stats. So I'll see what I can come up with and get with you on that, okay?
Well, as long as you have mud on the boots, the letters are okay.
There's some mud.
I'm definitely the mud.
Not as much as Matt, though. I mean, Matt's covered in mud sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I've had those days, too. I was a logger for many years.
See, I've been had mud on my boots, I guess, ever since that encounter 20 years ago. But there's a lot to it. There's a lot to it.
Does getting up in the mud up to my knees in Skapor Swamp looking for the lizard man, does that count too?
Anything you do that gets you in the mud is all right with me.
All right. I've been out there at that artesian well trying to figure out how deep is that little creek. That creek was deep. Found that out the hard way. God, it was cold as sun. And I was, and my legs, my feet, my shoes were wet from until I got all the way back to Myrtle. So, yep, we got some mud here in Myrtle, but that's it. That's another story for another day. But I'm glad you said that.
Remember this. There is a difference between being curious and persistent and downright stubborn, too.
True.
Yep, you got that one right. I'll decline comment on that one after some headlines today, but I understand.
Got a real question for you, Tom. Do you notice a difference in the ones out west compared to, like, say, over here where I'm at in the mountains?
No, I don't. As a matter of fact, I find the only differences to be regional differences. In fact, hey, I might have to let you, don't have much time, so I might have to let you wait until you can read my next book. But it has a treatise in there on that very subject about how they, because their population is low, they have to be very, very careful that they don't inbreed. Okay.
Exactly.
In order to do this, one of them from my area may go to your area to take a mate. At any rate, that's controlled very closely. I wrote the story of it, and it will be in my next book, of a young female that we knew in British Columbia in our research area where we spent 5 years researching their glyphs and structures. That got ready to take a mate, and she actually went to Oklahoma to do that. And the reason we know where she was is because my mentor, Arla Williams, Arla Collette, lives there, and she saw her when she was there. She knew the young man that she was mating, the young male, because it grew up in her area. And then after they were mated, they returned to British Columbia, and they live in southwestern British Columbia now. As a matter of fact, I'm going back up there in September, if it's at all possible, because I hope to see them again. It's been a long time since I've been able to see them. But she's a very unique appearing one. She's the only one I've ever seen that has blue eyes. And her hair looked like she'd been to a beauty shop. It looked like it had been cut. It was a very, very unusual looking female. So we knew it was her. Matter of fact, and when I started to tell her about my sighting with her, she says, hold it, I've got that written down. I saw her. And she went and got her notes and pulled them out. Something I highly recommend do. Keep a journal. Write these things down. Because when you get to my age, you forget. And they've got to be written down or you'll lose them. And if you lose them, everybody loses them. So please keep a journal and write these things down. No matter how insignificant they seem, they are important. She did that. She pulled that out and read it back to me, and it was verbatim what I was going to tell her. When I found out why, that's the reason. In order to avoid the possibility of inbreeding, they will travel halfway, two-thirds of the way across the country to take a mate. And almost invariably, the female will go to the male's clan where they decide whether they're going to go through with this, whether they're going to be a pair or not. Then when it comes time to live, they'll come back to the female's clan. Now, I don't know exactly why they do it that way, but that seems to be the way they do it.
That's a good point. Good point. See, I've asked a lot of questions. I've been asked, you know, why the different, why this one has four toes or this one has three toes, and I always kind of figured out it'd be inbreeding. But if they travel that far, then I'd say, you know, the possibility of inbreeding is still there, but it definitely helps with them all not being, you know, deformed.
Right, but there's a lot of possibility, too, of injury, accident, frostbite.
Exactly.
Also, the London reservoir find here a couple of years ago, in February a few years ago, by Toby Johnson, they cast 120-some tracks in this trackway. If you walked along that trackway, there would be a five-toed print, a five-toed print, and then a four-toed, then a five-toed, then a three-toed. They seemed like they would hold that toe, one or two toes up as they were walking. They had them. They just didn't put them all down all the time. They use their toes much more prehensilely than we do. First of all, they aren't stuffed in sheep because they're little crimped up things. But, I don't think it's a genetic problem near as much as it is the accidents. And I mean, you run your life barefooted in the woods, and you're going to lose toes. I can almost guarantee that. And then with this little trick we found that they do of holding their toes up off the ground when they walk, that adds to it too, because seldom do we find a trackway that's more than one or two or three tracks together. The London trackway was one good one. Paul Graves' trackway in Wenatchee in the snow, a mile and a half worth of trackway. If you have not seen the work on that, do so. It's absolutely fantastic work that he did. But over a mile and a half, they followed that trackway in the snow. And there again, you get the naysayers. Oh, that's a rabbit. I've never seen a rabbit with toes like ours. Okay?
No.
Maybe I haven't seen all the rabbits.
That's a good thing. See, on my study, whenever I had my encounter, and I had to go through, and I had to learn the wildlife for me to start going out there so I could eliminate what this is, that is. And I took wildlife conservation. I can track animals, like I track bears all the way up to the tree that they're in. I mean, I can track animals. That's a good thing. You have to learn your environment and what's out in the woods and the different types of animals to decipher what is. And yeah, a rabbit track is totally different than a Sasquatch track.
Quite a bit, yeah. And even if you took the whole body of the Abitino, because when a rabbit in the snow, when they jump, they do leave a large impression. But
right. They
don't leave the toe marks inside that impression.
No.
You know?
No.
And had other people say it was just deer. You know how people are going to do whatever they can to hear their head rattle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. They're going to try and that's like a good point right now. I've been seeing a lot of people been talking about this couple here recently had seen a Sasquatch go up the side of a bank and a hill, and everybody's like, oh, it was a bear. And but no bear, I can tell you. I mean, if it was a bear, it was very rare to see a bear this time of year because they're dinged up right now having babies. But, you know, and to go up a hill on a bipedal, I've seen bears walk on his legs, but not up out of a hill.
I always get a kick out of the people that say, oh, you just misidentified a bear. I've seen 1,000 bears, okay, and I never misidentified one of them. Why would
exactly.
I misidentify this one as a bear? You know, it just absolutely
yeah.
makes no sense. You know, a bear
yeah.
a bear looks like a bear, period.
Yep.
And besides, when you're standing at 10 feet, it's really hard to make a misidentification.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know what you're seeing. Of course, you know, you've got the skeptics that don't ever venture outside the box. They stay indoors and they may watch something on TV, but other than that, you know, they're not out in the woods. And it's like I always tell people, you know, if you're out in the woods, I don't care if you believe or not, there is something, especially hunters, there's something happened out there that they couldn't explain. There's always something. If you spend a lot of time out in the woods and, you know, no matter what type of stuff you do out in the woods, there's going to be something out there. You're going to be out there one time, at least one time. You're going to experience something. You don't know what it is or what's going on. And they're always like,
That's absolutely the truth. If they would just get out, you don't have to go hiking. Go find a nice spot in the sun. Unfold your folding chair. Sit down, open up your Kindle, pop a Diet Pepsi, and sit back and relax. You're going to be amazed, but they will come to you.
Oh, yeah.
They
yes,
get curious
yes.
why you're there. And they'll come check you out. I guarantee it. If they're in the area, they're going to be around you. So just go do it. You know, and keep an open mind, please.
Yep, definitely. Now, do you believe, okay, now that I've gotten into this, that there's been other type of cryptid animals, have you come across any other type of cryptids that, you know, that wasn't Sasquatch?
I have not, but then that doesn't seem to be my niche. I know people very well that understand Dogman. It's just not my experience. And does that mean they don't exist? No, it means they're not my experience. And, maybe the day will come, maybe not. It doesn't matter. You know, I have enough to keep me busy for the rest of my life. I was talking to my friend Bob Gimlin on the phone yesterday. We get together to talk once a week. And we were sitting there trying to figure out how in the world, when we were younger, we ever had time for a job. We're both of us buried in stuff to do now. And we're supposed to be fully retired, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know how we ever had time for a job. But, you know, I do the things that I'm asked to do. I investigate the things that I've been asked to investigate. And most of all, I answer questions for anybody that has questions, has legitimate, honest questions. They don't have to be legitimate if they're honest. If a person doesn't know, I'm willing to try to tackle them. Again, the ones I won't deal with are the ones that want to be belligerent or bellicose or just want to be ornery. I don't have time for those people anymore. I was on another radio show here a while back. It was in the course of that show. It was a two-hour show. In that course of that show, after it was done, I had almost 100 new friends contact me on Facebook. In addition to that, there were about eight who wrote really vitriolic reviews of what I had to say. And you can imagine, you've heard what I've said, because I don't change it for anybody. I just tell what happens. And,
exactly.
And so here I have 100 people that want to know more. They come to me to ask questions. And then I have eight that want to raise Cain and be mean and vindictive. Who have I got time for?
Exactly.
You know, I don't care whether they exist even. I'm not going to spend time with them. I don't have that much time left. I'm 75 years old. You know, I've got things I need to do.
Well, I'll definitely, you'll be hearing. I'm always looking for more advice and anything to help in my study. And I'll, you'll probably get a few.
So that's the key for advice. Somebody once said that if you ask Tom what time it is, he'll tell you how a watch works.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Well, Tom, let me ask you something, Tom. You will be down here in the West Georgia area in at the 1st of October for that conference, right?
Yes, I will.
Well, great. I know you had mentioned to me about dropping by. I talked with Matt. I think we'd both like to drop by and speak with you. Maybe we could have another talk like this on Bigfoot and Company when we meet you and share a few stories and all that. Would that be okay with you?
I would love that. That would be great. There's nothing I like better than talking about the big guys.
Well, good. I might have a few interesting stories for you by that time. I've got a little research I'm working on. I guess in the area of Lizard Man and everything, that's starting to heat up, no pun intended, because we are hopefully after this Arctic blast, it'll start warming up a little bit and Lizard Man will get back out. And there's just a lot of interesting things going on. And I'm gonna re-listen to our conversation today. There's definitely some scientific research I'd like to try to apply to what you talked about, and see what we can do. So I'll just leave it at that, and I'll be talking with you about some of those topics and everything. So what have you got going on in the next 4 to 6 months before you get back down here? You got any, other than, of course, you've got your third annual conference is coming up the end of April. In fact, that's the same weekend as the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, but we'll be on opposite sides of the country for that. So I don't think we'll be poaching anybody, but other than that conference, you got any special sighting trips or group discussions or anything that you're going to be taking part in? Or it sounded like, when's your book going to be coming out?
Absolutely. This is going to be a busy summer. Barb and Gabby's group have kind of, they take me with them a lot of places. And her camping season starts in May. And I won't be able to go on all of them because I can't camp anymore. I got to do my camping in a motel with walls anymore. But we still get together quite often. I'll go up and spend the evening with them. And we'll have little sessions, training sessions, talk sessions, that sort of thing. And those will be going on. We've got the conference in April. That's going to be huge. That'll take all of our effort up to that point. Then it's just from one thing to another. I've always got, that's the neat thing about living here. I live in the last little community before you get the mountains. Okay, when you leave this town, there isn't another town for miles and miles and miles clear across the mountain range. Okay, and that mountain range goes to 14,400 feet, so it's not inconsequential. So this time of the year, we don't get over it. We have to either do an end run or wait till about June. But we'll be busy all summer. We're going to have those campouts. We're also going back to Canada in September. We've already got that set up. We've got our reservations made. It's an absolute. We spent 5 years doing research up there on we didn't even get to talk about that subject, on glyphs and structures and what they mean. And I've published a book on that, my partners and I. And we're going to go back and take some people with us and into that area and just spend time just sitting back and enjoying the big people around. Then, of course, then in October, we're coming back to Georgia for the conference there. And then November is Sasquatch Summit time, back out the ocean for that one, right on the shores of the Pacific Ocean. And I've just love that conference. Wonderful people, great people. And that's what I like about these conferences is, you know, the speakers are good, the presenters are good, what you learn is good, but the chance to sit and talk to people is just out of this world. And I absolutely love what it's like. You know, I was at the International Bigfoot Conference in Kennewick, Washington, a couple of years ago, and I'm sitting there at my table, and all of a sudden, this lady just screamed out my name and comes running as hard as she can across the room. She leaped and put her arms around my neck and gave me a big old hug and a kiss and just, "Tom, I've got to thank you. You saved my life." And I said, I kind of took me aback a little bit. I says, "What do you mean?" And her husband came up then, which kind of spoiled the mood, I have to admit, but no, not nice guy. Nice, a very beautiful couple. But what happened, he'd had an experience, somewhat like yours probably, Matt, and it scared the daylights out of her. And she was really afraid to go back in the woods again. And they had driven from Edmonton. Is it Edmonton or further north? Either Edmonton or Calgary. I can never remember which it is. But the furthest north one, Alberta, Canada, Kennewick, Washington, so she can see me at that conference and to thank me personally. This work isn't worth every effort you put into it. The books you write aren't important, and the people you talk to are not important. They're absolutely paramount. They're beautiful. And that's what I'm going to be doing.
That's a good point. Whenever I go to these people, they open up. They can open up to you, and you can tell there's a relief whenever they talk to you. And that's what I love about these conferences. Whenever I'm there and people are talking to me, they're telling me you can speak, and that they have, like, you've just lifted a huge weight off their shoulders that, you know, I love it. That's what I love, is the people that show up to these things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just the nicest people in the world. You know, they're open-minded. And the ones that aren't leave. You know, I had my presentation at Ocean Shores at the Sasquatch Summit very early on. Two people got up and walked out. I said, "Gee, I guess I wasn't talking to them." You know? They took offense because they mentioned something probably about mind speak or something
like that.
Well,
that's fine. I mean,
find something else, somebody else to listen to. You know, put $20 in the slot. They probably do more for you than I will. You know, so just come and have a good time. That's what it's all about.
Right. Tom, we got about 5 minutes left, but I've got just a quick question for you. And I might have mentioned this briefly when we were talking on the phone the last time, but what do you know about the Bigfoot activity up near Mount Shasta? That's an area that I want to go come and explore sometime within the next year. And how far are you from Mount Shasta, and what do you know about the Bigfoot activity up there, if anything?
That's my family ancestral home. Well, not ancestral, but few generations back is that area, so I know it really well. There is a lot of activity. It's wild country. Also, it is an area of crossing ley lines, and I'm not really well versed on these, but I do know their energy fields, and we're all energy. Everything about us is energy. It's controlled by energy, and it's the same with the Sasquatch people. Their energy. So there's some wild things that go on that mountain and around that mountain. You know, when you have outflows of magma like that from the center of the earth, it sets up magnetic fields that are strange, and that causes strange things to happen. And that place is no exception. And then you have a decent population of Sasquatch in the area, and who knows what else? I have no idea, but I know they're there.
Okay, well, that gives me a little bit of a starting point to start looking, and I'll be consulting with you more since you are from there. Matt, do you have one last question for Tom before we get out of here? Matt, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. It's not really a question, just be on the lookout for some of my questions there, because you definitely are experienced, and I love talking to people that experience, and I definitely can tell you, I mean, you use some brilliant methods for weight and everything, and I love that kind of stuff. You know, you look at it, your intelligent way of approach, and I love that. So you'll definitely be hearing from me quite a bit, if you don't mind.
Thank you. I'm always willing, always ready.
All right. Well, Tom, we want to thank you very much for being with us here today on Bigfoot and Company. And we'll be in touch. We'll ask you back. Love to hear you talk, love your stories, and everybody can find you. They can find you on Facebook. And
find me on Facebook.
Yeah. Is that the best way to reach you?
I have a website, www.Ghosts of Ruby Ridge. That was the first book that I wrote. And for information about the conference, it's Ghosts of Ruby Ridge /Sasquatch. So even I can remember that.
Great. Well, again, thank you so much for your time. We loved your stories. I know that Matt and I both learned a lot. And we'll catch you again soon on Facebook with your posts. We'll be in touch with you. And I just want to say, Matt, as my partner in crime here at Bigfoot and Company, thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I've just really enjoyed this.
Well, thanks a lot. We want to thank Jackson Samuel calling in from Australia, checking in with us. He's a good guy. He was on our show last week. So I want to say thank you to everybody. We'll see you next week with another exciting guest. More cool information on the one and only Bigfoot and Company podcast. That's bigfootandcompany.com. So look, have a great week, everybody. Be safe, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.